Hey folks, Mackenzie Lambert here, your host from Mac and the Movies. We have pretty much reached the end of 2018. This episode will be a mix of a year in review and holiday special. I'll be sharing my favorite films and video games for the year. I'll have some honors to give out for the Mac and the Movies Hall of Fame. To close the show, I'm joined by a special guest, John Cleveland, fellow cinephile and a very funny guy who joins me in riffing movies. We'll be sharing our top 10 alternative holiday Christmas movies. Without further ado, let's begin. For starters, let's give out the 2018 honors for the Mac and the Movies Hall of Fame. There are two wings. One is a front of the camera. The other is a behind the camera. To qualify for the front of the camera wing, an actor or actress has to appear in the most movies reviewed on the podcast. The same principle is applied to behind the camera recipients as well. For the front of the camera wing, we have an unprecedented three-way tie. With five movies each, we have Stone Cold Steve Austin, sharing the honor with the duo of Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill.
He's the guy who's the talk of the town with the restless gun. Don't you bother to fool him around. Keeps the vomits on the run.
What gave these three recipients the advantage was having episodes dedicated to their film work. Congratulations to them. Now we have the behind the camera honors. With his work as a film score composer for 10 films covered on the podcast, without a doubt, the 2018 Hall of Fame spot goes to Harry Manfredini. Manfredini composed the music for 9 out of 10 of the Friday the 13th films. Plus, he did the music for the horror film The Children in 1980, which we covered in the Grindhouse Experience series. But I have to include one more honor for the behind-the-camera wing of the Hall of Fame. The recipient of this honor is a group that was the focus of a podcast episode that yielded the highest combination of plays and downloads. Italy's own Goblin. Thank you. If you want to learn more about these maestros of the macabre, check out J. Blake Ferreira's Score to Death. He has a great couple of interviews with the likes of Manfredini, in addition to Goblin's Claudio Simonetti and Maurizio Guarini. Congrats to all five of the first inductees into the Mech in the Movies Hall of Fame. Before I get into my top five films and video games for 2018, I have to share with you the titles that didn't win me over. These are the media that I didn't particularly have a fun time with. Here's a caveat, though. I wasn't able to see every film and video game that came out in the year. To start, here are some of the video games I couldn't recommend for 2018. First one is Far Cry 5. There are some who say that gaming is about the journey and not the destination. I couldn't disagree more. It's not like a movie where I'm only asked to spend 2 hours and have an ending that leaves me unfulfilled. If you have me invest 30 to 40 hours in a gaming campaign and you leave me with two equally unappealing endings, you've wasted my time. Neither of these endings work. One ending is a post-apocalyptic scenario where nuclear bombs detonate in the nearby mountains. Never in the game is the president established that this ending is possible. There's no hint that nuclear superpowers are at the height of tensions. There's no indication that Joseph Seed was in possession of nuclear weapons. All the player has to go on are the delusions of grandeur of the Seed family and their followers. The other ending, the player frees their partners after they get caught again by Joseph Seed, which makes the whole ordeal leading up to this moment a complete waste. The player drives off with their partners in a Jeep. Soon, a song plays over the radio that induces the player into a trance. The screen fades to black, implying that the player will kill the people that they just rescued. Gee, thanks Ubisoft for that empowering ending. With the announcement of the next Far Cry game taking place in the post-apocalypse, post-Far Cry 5 environment, it still doesn't change the fact that these endings were equally stupid. The next one, and this is going to raise some eyebrows, God of War. The opening fight with the stranger that attacks Kratos and his son was fine the first time, and then after I beat the stranger, the fight started again. This kind of annoyed me, and then I finally beat the stranger again the second time, and then a third fight starts with the stranger. That's where I turned off the game, deleted the game off my hard drive, and deleted the saves off my PS4. I was done. If the repetitive fight with a character I have no clue on and therefore not really intrigued, I don't know what I don't know what they were expecting. I know he was supposed to be annoying on purpose, but for me, he got X-Pac heat when that third fight started. This is the kind of heat that doesn't make me want to see him get his ass kicked. This is the kind of heat that makes me want to turn off the game and play something else. I know God of War has a massive following, the whole boy thing was a meme of the year, but it made a bad first impression on me. And after that bad first impression, I didn't care to see the game through. On a special note, I'm giving Bethesda a dishonorable mention. I didn't play Fallout 76 specifically, but given how they recycled assets from both Skyrim and Fallout 4, I can make a case for how I already did play Fallout 76 on multiple occasions. Then there's the bait and switch with the collector's edition bags, the poor recompense for the bait and switch of those bags, the doxing of information to people who requested a refund, and the overpriced holiday-related DLC. Bethesda, take off. You are an idiot! Now for the movies I didn't care for. I know a lot of people went nuts over this particular film. They hyped it up. I saw it, and I failed to see what the hype was all about. I failed to see what the big deal was with Mandy. Mandy is what happens when someone tries to mix art house cinema with trauma, and they failed miserably. Over-stylized, pretentious, comes off as trying to be profound but has nothing deep to say or show for it. There are these baddies that seem to come out like straight out of Hobo with a Shotgun and Father's Day. If the film is trying to recall the old school films of the 1970s, Mandy misses what made them enjoyable. Simplicity. These movies were straightforward in their intentions. They knew what they were and they reveled in it. Mandy just couldn't get that idea down. The first Deadpool felt like a risk, like a movie we weren't meant to see. Fox fought hard to keep that film from getting made. With a small budget and the devoted duo of Ryan Reynolds and Tim Miller, we got an amazing Deadpool movie. This makes Deadpool 2 all the more of a disappointment. With double the budget and a longer running time, Deadpool 2 felt bloated and safe. The corporate fingerprints were all over this production. Reynolds overindulged himself with no one keeping him in check. Tim Miller provided that needed restraint, and his absence was all the more felt from that lack of restraint. Other than Reynolds' Deadpool, the rest of the cast offers meandering or performances that I hated. Josh Brolin as Cable was kind of bland. Zazie Beetz as Domino was okay. Julian Dennison as Firefist was the most annoying character I have ever had to go through in a 2018 film. The jokes were safe. This is the second movie, and they're still making gags based on Green Lantern and X-Men Origins Wolverine. Obvious DC jokes were obvious. X-Force was wasted in their sequence, which was contrary to the trailers and the TV spots. For all the people that gave Infinity War a hard time for featuring the Hulk in Wakanda, but gave a pass to Deadpool 2 for lying about X-Force's presence, you're a hypocrite. But the single worst movie I saw this year was the direct-to-video release, Day of the Dead Bloodline. It's bad enough we lost George Romero in 2017, then this movie comes out and completely tarnishes the legacy of the 1985 original. You have a zombie that is capable of using stealth. He goes through a bunker and kills most of the community hiding in there. This didn't feel like a zombie movie as much as it did a shoddy version of Alien. In the original, Miguel Salazar, played by Anthony DeLeo Jr., was a soldier struggling with the isolation and claustrophobia of being underground. In the remake, Salazar is played by Jeff Gumm, and he's closer to resembling Captain Rhodes. They took one of the more sympathetic characters of the original and turned them into one of the biggest hardasses from the original. With Romero's death still fresh in the minds of the horror community, this one comes off as a bad production choice made with the worst timing. Alright, let's go right into the top 5 video games I played in 2018. For my number 5, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate for the Nintendo Switch. Yes, it's a rehash, but it's a fun rehash. With any Smash Bros. Game, you know what you're getting. A strong roster of characters, pick-up-and-play controls, plenty of levels to choose from, classic music track after classic music track. I don't own a Switch myself, so it pays to know people who do. Number 4. Batman: The Enemy Within for the PS4. The last complete game to come out of the recently deceased Telltale Games. With the dual identity of Batman and Bruce Wayne, you have to navigate through a hairy situation where the safety of Gotham City hangs in the balance. You have no shortage of great characters to interact with, including but not limited to the likes of the Joker, I mean John Doe. There's also the Riddler, Harley Quinn, Bane, Mr. Freeze, and Amanda Waller. Complicating matters is the return of Catwoman. I particularly like this game's role reversal of John Doe and Harley Quinn. We've seen Harley be the one on the receiving end of the abuse. Here, she's the dominant one of the pair, and I actually like that switch. Anthony Ingruber steals the scenes as John Doe, aka the Joker. He's got the Mark Hamill laugh down pat. His performance is almost as if he was told to give us Sean Whalen as the Joker. For those who may not know, Whalen was a character actor popular in the 1990s. He played Roach in the Wes Craven film People Under the Stairs. He was also in Twister, Idle Hands, The Cable Guy, and even the recent Death House. It's a nice title that serves as a fitting farewell to a studio that had a knack for expensive licenses and limited gameplay, but good storytelling. Number 3, Monster Hunter World for the PS4. This is what Fallout 76 should have been. Just give me a game that is primarily single player and allow me to be able to play it with two or three of my friends. This was my multiplayer game of the year. Such an immersive experience at that. Beautiful environments, intricate monster designs, Capcom knocked it out of the park with this one, and the frequent updates and free DLC doesn't hurt either. I spent plenty of hours with friends tracking, hunting, and sometimes capturing various monsters. A great array of weapons to choose from. I was a gunner, and a damn fine one at that. Loved the customization, and oh god, those palicos.
So fluffy.
Number 2, Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill Slaps and Beans for PS4. A retro-style side-scrolling two-player beat-em-up featuring a duo of beloved Italian action comedy stars. The levels are a basic summation of their career. You get a start in a spaghetti western, then move to their action comedies. There are mini-games like a hot dog eating contest, a dune buggy race, and even car chases. Both characters have their signature moves. In single player, you can switch between characters on the fly. Love the music from Oliver Onions and Franco Michelisi. For some, the $20 price tag may be a hard sell, but I got my money's worth. Plus, the game made me go check out their actual films. And you know what? It was a Kickstarter project, or a Kickstarter, well, it was crowdfunded at least. And you know what? The results were pretty impressive for a game with that origin. And my number one game of the year, Fire Pro Wrestling World for the PS4. Once you look past the $50 season pass, which I didn't personally care for, there was nothing in there that was being offered that I felt I needed to have access to. But other than that, this is going to be the last wrestling game I will ever need to buy. The small roster and decent list of options was aided by the inclusion of a community of creators offering a slew of wrestlers to download and add to your roster. As long as you have the hard drive space, you can download as many wrestlers as you want. While the graphics look vintage and recall the 16-bit era, don't let that fool you. Fire Pro Wrestling is notorious for a steep learning curve, but once you get that curve down, it's just an absolute blast to play. Alright, now for my top 5 movies of 2018 that I saw. Number 5, Black Panther. An enjoyable movie that improved upon the Shakespearean dynamics of Thor with a fresh exotic locale in Wakanda. Chadwick Boseman in the lead was alright. Thankfully, there was as strong a supporting cast as one could ask for. Andy Serkis, Michael B. Jordan, Martin Freeman, Letitia Wright, Winston Duke, Danai Gurira, and Danny Kaluuya. I would probably say the weakest part of the film, though, was the CGI. The rhinos and the climactic fight in the depths of the Vibranium Reserve left a lot to be desired. Other than that, this was a solid Marvel film from Ryan Coogler, the director of Creed, which may have been overshadowed by another MCU film that came out afterwards, but no credit can be taken away from Black Panther. Number 4, Upgrade. This movie came out in the midst of two comic book movie sequels, a Star Wars spinoff, and a gender swap reboot. The deck was stacked against this film, doomed to be lost in the shuffle. The box office shows that. But recently, more and more people are coming around to this film. Upgrade is, without a doubt, one of the most underrated horror films of 2018, and one of the most underrated films, period, of the year. This movie did everything Sony's Venom backpedaled on. R-rated, violent, gory, great fight choreography, a wonderful performance by lead actor Logan Marshall Green. As far as I'm concerned, the idea of having HAL 9000 in my head is much more terrifying than having a loser symbiote attached to me. Loved the John Carpenter-esque music score by Jed Palmer. Number 3, A Quiet Place. So, Jim from The Office not only managed to make a decent horror film, but one of the best horror films of the year? Good on him. John Krasinski and Emily Blunt are the heads of a family trying to survive in a world infested with monsters that hunt by sound. Millicent Simmons, a legit deaf actress, is a standout in the cast as the daughter Reagan. She also contributed to the sign language tutoring for the cast. One of the most intense and most silent theater experiences I've ever had. The sound design team should get as much credit as the cast and director. They made a film where being quiet was essential to the immersion, to buy into the world that we're being presented with, and it worked in spades. Number 2, Film Worker. An excellent documentary on Leon Vitali. Vitali was an actor who worked on Kubrick's Barry Lyndon. He went on to be the devoted personal assistant to Kubrick. The two would frequently butt heads, but they had a mutual respect and a passion for filmmaking. Vitale's importance cannot be understated. It was Vitale that casted Danny Lloyd for The Shining. Vitale advocated for R. Lee Ermey to be the drill sergeant for Full Metal Jacket. With the recent Blu-rays and 4K editions of Kubrick's films, Vitale was the one to oversee these transfers. Not only is a light shone on Vitale, but in the field of the film worker. People who are the blue collars and the gophers on movie productions. They don't get the Oscars or the prestige. They have the love of the filmmaking process in their veins, and they do their share. And number one, Avengers Infinity War. Did you honestly think any other film would be number one for me? I was there opening weekend in 2008 for Iron Man and for Nick Fury to utter the phrase Avengers Initiative. 10 years later, and after 18 films, the series is growing bigger with more characters and better villains. Who knew that the Russo brothers could manage all these characters in a fitting fashion? The Avengers, the Guardians of the Galaxy, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, all these different personalities in one movie. Thanos may get the credit as the main baddie, but some accolades should be given to Tom Von Lawler as Ebony Maw. Maw was pretty much the proverbial French taunter for Thanos. One of the great trash talkers. It subverted my expectations, and not in a bad way. The characters I had pegged as finished were still alive at the end. Spider-Man's last words still give me chills. The ending left me gobsmacked and curious to see how Endgame is going to bring this to a close. For all the people who complain about a lack of backstory for these characters in this film, you had a dozen and a half movies to catch up. That's your fault for not knowing, and the movie is not going to waste time spoon-feeding you information you should already know. And there it is, my top five films and video games that I saw and played in 2018. What were some of your favorites? Let me know in the comments or on social media. You can email me at my Gmail. To close the show, here's a conversation I had on December 12th with my associate, John Cleveland. You may note a change in audio quality. We were using a conference mic. I was probably sitting a little bit farther away from it than John, so he comes off as louder, but I think you can still hear me pretty clearly. So I'm joined here by my good friend, as always, Mr. John Cleveland.
Hi, everybody.
We're going to go ahead and do a quick list for our top 10 favorite alternative Christmas selections. Now, we do kind of have to establish that alternative is kind of a subjective term.
Yes, yes, 100%. Definitely not your mainstream. This isn't a Christmas story. This isn't, you know, A Miracle on 34th Street. This is just a little different. Some a little more different than others.
Although we may have a few conventional selections on here, other than that, yeah, we're doing the best we can.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so right off the bat, we'll start with our number 10s, 9s, 8s, and so on and so forth. So, John, go ahead and start us off with your number 10.
Coming in hot with my number 10. My number 10 is A Long Kiss Goodnight. It's very unconventional. It's an action film. It's a crime spy thriller with comedy elements, starring Gina Davis and Samuel Jackson. It's amazing. Also, filmed to some degree in the area, in around Niagara Falls.
Awesome, awesome. Shane Black involved in that? Because I know he
has... I do believe, yes.
All right.
He's one of the writers.
Makes sense.
Yep.
My number 10 is Terry Gilliam's Brazil.
Ooh, good choice.
Basically, Monty Python meets George Orwell. in today's political, socioeconomic climate, it's frighteningly relevant.
Incredibly so.
Yeah, Jonathan Pryce, you've got Robert De Niro in one of his more unconventional roles.
The plumber.
Yep. You got Python alumnus Michael Palin, who's always good. Yep. And you got the one and only Bob Hoskins. it starts off with the family watching A Christmas Carol, and then a bomb goes off. That pretty much tells you all you need to know right there.
Yes, and the tempo is set.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, number 9.
Okay, my number 9, unconventional or conventional, however you want to say it, is Santa with Muscles. Yes, starring Terry Hulk Hogan
and Ted Turner's mustache.
And, it's just fun. It's a fun movie with an amnesia plot and, what else do you need, really, than Hulk Hogan as Santa Claus with amnesia? But he's not really Santa Claus. I won't spoil it for those who don't know, but it's a hoot.
Yeah, I remember you showed that to us a couple of years ago, and it was a good. It was actually probably one of the more enjoyable family Hulk Hogan movies that I've seen.
Yes,
definitely much better than High Noon and Mega Mountain.
Oh yes, much better, but that is a pretty low bar.
Okay, my number nine, The French Connection, with Gene Hackman and Roy Scheider as the duo of Papa Doyle and Buddy Russo.
Yes.
It's basically based on a true story of two detectives taking down a heroin racket in New York City. Probably my favorite chase sequence in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a car chase, but it's a car chase in a train, and that's still a very effective sequence.
Yes.
And for those who think, is it really a Christmas movie? Well, yeah, it opens up with Doyle in a Santa suit. So, yes, it is a Christmas movie.
Yes, it is. Yes, 100%. And I have to agree that this is one of the best chase scenes. Although I do like the one in Bullet a little bit more.
People always say Bullet, and it's
I don't think Bullet's a better film. I'll say that. French Connection's a better film, but I do like Bullet. I also like Ronan's chase scene.
Oh, God, Ronan. Very underrated.
Yes, yes. So...
Number eight.
Now, this is about as obscure as my list probably is going to get for those at home. This is a little film that I found a couple years ago after making a bad joke to a friend, and that paid off. The movie is called Two Front Teeth. It is a Christmas horror film.
With martial arts,
vampires... It's got a killer reindeer. It's got everything. It's a great little low-budget horror film, but it's a lot of fun. It's got a lot of heart. I actually found it because a friend of mine wanted to know what I wanted for Christmas, and I had no idea. So I simply uttered the words, my two front teeth. She then found the movie, and we watched it, and we've loved it ever since.
And a similar story too. When we briefly did the Cackling Jack podcast, yes. My friend and I, Mike Letters, we were discussing alternative Christmas movies on the podcast, and I mentioned Two Front Teeth. He had never heard of this movie, and now just recently we reconnected, and I think a couple of weeks ago he said, "Oh, by the way, I never got to say thank you for introducing me to Two Front Teeth."
Such a good film. Highly suggest it for all those looking for something new and different this time of year.
All right, my number eight is Black Christmas, the original 1974 film. The first holiday slasher, so it's got that going for it.
Yes.
Directed by Bob Clark, who 9 years later would be directing A Christmas Story. So how's that for a double feature?
Yeah. I would love to see that double build on like a Blu-ray release.
And you got a really great cast. You got Olivia Hussey. You've got Margot Kidder, a pre-SCTV Andrea Martin, and of course the one and only John Saxon.
Of course, John Saxon, in a role that that he'd never done before, and I don't think he ever did before. He was, I do believe, a cop. And now that's pretty rare for John. Oh wait, no, he's always a cop. He's literally always a cop.
But he's more on the level. You don't really get the sense that he's like a corrupted official.
No, he's.
And it sort of kind of prepared him for that very similar role in the Nightmare on Elm Street series.
Yeah, actually, I'd like to think they share a universe.
Yeah.
The Fred House is just down the way on Elm Street.
I believe it. All right, number seven.
Okay, my number seven. This is eerily parallel. My number seven is also a Black Christmas. Your eight, my seven. Mm-hmm. I fell in love with it over time, actually. It was not... I watched it the first time. People were like, oh, you got to see this movie. It's a holiday slasher, you know, and everything. And I just didn't really get into it as much. And I've watched it a couple times since then, and every single time it gets better and better. There's so many little subplots, so many little good things. And I think the best thing... and I'm sure you'll agree with this, is how they don't characterize the villain. He is almost a force. He is in the house. It does have that.
We don't know his backstory.
But we don't know his backstory. We can allude to it a little bit by what he's saying, but we don't really know. And it's just a good concept.
And there's some really great shots in it, too. Like, you have the one girl who's in the attic who has, like, the rubber over her head.
Oh, yeah.
And you see it, like, actually sucked into her mouth a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And there's the one shot, too, of where, I guess it's, like, in the little crease in the door. You can actually see his eyes for a brief moment.
Actually, the original DVD that I had, that was the cover.
Oh.
I didn't see the house DVD thing before. So that was the first time I ever saw it.
They spoiled a really good shot on the box cover. That's depressing, but...
Hey, made me want to watch it.
Oh, yeah. All right, my number seven is Iron Man 3. with Robert Downey Jr., Don Cheadle.
Oh, I thought we were friends. Continue. I'll let you do your piece, but
yeah, it's Shane Black. It's him having fun with a Marvel character, fresh off of the success of the Avengers. Christmas time, as you would expect from Mr. Black, and I'm not going to go into the Mandarin twist because that really just it's not really part of the point to think that this is a Christmas movie. So you definitely get that festive Christmas spirit in the film, despite the fact that it takes place in California.
I don't agree with anything you just said. I loathe that film. It's literally, it was in the top five or bottom five, you might say, films I saw that year. It's still my least favorite superhero movie I've ever seen, ever. I want you to know what that means. Condor Man, I think, was a better film. Howard the Duck, superior. Get out of here. Let's move on.
All right. Number six is...
Number six. Again, bring a little levity this thing. Number six for me is a film about a killer snowman, Jack Frost.
Ooh. Okay, yes.
Yes, yes. I love that film. It's absurd. It doesn't take itself too seriously. It doesn't take itself seriously at all. It's a movie about a killer snowman. It's amazing. It is the perfect amount of cheese, the perfect amount of just seasonal randomness, and it's just a lot of fun.
I remember taking many a trip to Blockbuster Video, and whenever I would walk into the horror section, I would see the holographic box art for it, where you would have the kind, cuddly snowman, and then when you twist it the right way, you get that ferocious, clawed tooth snowman. It's just...
so good.
The movie itself is just an enjoyable watch.
Yes.
And the full movie is on YouTube, so you can find this quite easily.
You have no excuse not to watch it. Sit the family down and enjoy... A good, wholesome Christmas movie.
Except for maybe the shower scene with Shannon Elizabeth. Other than that, you know what? It's a family film, actually. You could get away with this as family viewing.
Hey, it's integral to the plot. How much the boy loves his father is integral to the solving of this problem. I'm just saying. No spoilers. But it's a family film. With a shower scene.
Yep.
So, yes.
My number six. Now, number six here, this is kind of riding the line between mainstream and alternative. My number six is Gremlins.
It's a great movie.
Oh, absolutely great movie. Just the great puppeteering. You've got Zach Gillian. You've got Phoebe Cates. The wonderful Dick Miller, who...
He's just funny. He's just fun in everything he does.
And it's Joe Dante, like one of his really big films from the 1980s, which was a good decade for him.
You can't see this, but when he said Joe Dante, I made little annotation marks in my hands. Yeah, it's Joe Dante. Yeah, Steven Spielberg wasn't really directing it.
It's kind of like a Toby Hooper poltergeist situation.
Yes. oddly similar type of situation. Yes. But no, I also love that movie. Its mythos is awesome. Mm-hmm. I love the second one, too, because it pokes fun at that.
Oh, yeah, the second one is just a crazy meta spree.
Yeah, but the first one is just, it's iconic. And if it wasn't for, I lean on the side that it's a little, like, it's in the gray zone, don't get me wrong, but I lean on that it's a little more mainstream, it would be on my list, too. I love that movie.
All right, number five.
Number five, cutting it down, top five. Trading Places. Also, fairly mainstream, but not in any way related to Christmas mainstream.
No, people wouldn't think of... I mean, you have to really think about this as a Christmas movie.
Yeah. And it really... I mean, admittedly, it's a smaller element of the film, I feel, than the it's not a major part of the plot. But I always saw it on TV around Christmas. I enjoyed it. Looking back at it now, I see the Christmas elements are there. And I just love it. I mean, it's great. Dan Aykroyd... I think it's probably his best film as an actor. I know there's Ghostbusters fans going to rip my head off about that, but I honestly think he's just great in his role.
I will agree with the Ghostbusters that was Bill Murray's movie.
Yes,
that was Dan Aykroyd's movie.
Yes, and Eddie Murphy proved how versatile of an actor he was. It's so good. It's such a good story and a great film.
And that movie kind of sort of gave way for Eddie Murphy to be in, like, actually bigger quality productions like Coming to America or The Distinguished Gentleman.
Oh, yes. Very true. Very, very true.
Let me just quickly... I got one more that I want to add.
Oh, just thinking on the fly. Just adding something.
Because I immediately thought of one when we talked about wrestlers in movies.
Uh-oh. Okay. Be prepared. Brace yourself, folks at home. This can't end well.
It's not a real mention. It's not on my list, though.
No.
Okay, number five. People are going to be a little surprised that this is as low on my list as it is, but I put Die Hard at number five.
Okay. Now, which one?
The first one.
Okay.
Just because for some people, it just ain't Christmas unless they see Hans Gruber fall off Nakatomi Plaza.
I actually, I have a friend. That is his Christmas movie. And they basically, that's what they put on when they set up the house. The Christmas tree can't go up until Hans goes down. You know, it's great. It's a great, you know, it's the essential heist movie. Mm-hmm. It's the quintessential, arguably.
The odds.
Situation. Yeah, Man Against the Odds. Arguably the best action film ever made. There's a lot of argument to that, but still, it's great. It's a great movie, and 100%, it is a Christmas movie. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah, it is. And you got, what's his name? Reginald Del Johnson?
I'm not even going to try that name.
Oh, yeah, from Family Matters. So the father from Family Matters. This was...
His name's Al.
Yeah.
Don't ruin my childhood.
Still, probably one of the better examples of a comedic... A relief in an action film.
Still being a great secondary man, like mm-hmm. just a great film.
Number fours.
This might surprise you, but my number four is also Die Hard. I just put it a little bit higher on the list. Again, it's too iconic not to mention. I almost put it as number 10 just to get it out of the way, but I looked at my list and I went, it's too good to be that low on my list. It is such a good film. And I'm not going to sit here and talk about it because we all know how great of a film it is. So,
okay. My number four is one of the great examples of Northern European horror that came out around the mid-2000s to late 2000s. Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale.
Ooh.
This was around the time where you had movies like Troll Hunter, Dead Snow, Let the Right One In.
Oh, just
really some of the best horror in the last 10 years.
Yeah, you nailed it. Northern Europe just swinging and hitting every one of them. Mm-hmm. It's great stuff.
And it's just a great movie just because it kind of takes the Santa Claus myth back to its roots when it was kind of closer to the Krampus myth.
Yes.
And the one great line, the real Santa Claus, I forgot what they say, but like the real Santa Claus is evil, the Coca-Cola Santa is a hoax.
Yes, yes. We actually, and that's an odd thing you bring up too. Like if you really look at the history of it, not to get too deep into mm-hmm. that, but 100%, like the Krampus story, that's part and parcel for the Santa story. Mm-hmm. Like we decided, like, what was it? Bad kids get coal.
Yeah.
They got coal because it was a substitute for what they were supposed to be getting. Mm-hmm. It was also indicative of labor and stuff.
Yeah.
But the original myth is a lot darker, as most European myths mm-hmm. tend to be. Thank you, the Brothers Grimm. But I find that film is very, very good. I didn't end up putting it on my list just because it's a little new for me and it doesn't ring with the holiday that I enjoy per se, but mm-hmm. it is a very good film.
All right, number threes. We're getting to the big ones now.
Okay, top three, the heavy hitters. All right. So this is all nostalgia. I'll admit it right now. This is just, it's Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, the MST3K mm-hmm. version. I've watched it without it. It's not that great. But I remember as a kid, I watched MST when I was in high school, and I loved it. That's never been one of my favorite episodes, but weirdly, I always watch it around the holidays. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't feel like the holidays without that black and white, or color. You think there's a colored version. Just Santa Claus bumbling his way around Mars. It's just hilarious.
And was that the episode with the Patrick Swayze Christmas?
It was. Yep. Arguably the best song they ever made.
And Mike Nelson was their musical director, so
yes.
There you go. MST3K, I missed it on the MST3K stuff, but I did see their riff tracks live for Santa Claus Conquers the Martian, and that
also
was quite
good.
Enjoyable.
Very, very good. Yes.
And actually, a filmmaker I'm associates with, Brett Kelly, he actually did a stage version of Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
I've seen stills of that.
Yeah, and for the Martians, they use puppets, which is actually a pretty cool idea.
That is interesting. Yeah. There's also a name drop also, not name drop, mm-hmm. but also to bring it up for those, Cinematic Titanic also did Santa mm-hmm. Claus Conquers the Martians. So if you're interested in watching it with a riff, you know, people making fun of it, it's probably why you're listening to us.
Yeah. So if you're one of those people that are like, I don't like Mike, I'd rather listen to Joel. Well, there you go. That was Joel's group.
Yep. Yeah. So there's three different riffing groups listening to that for you. So there you go.
My number three is psychological horror-ish film, Christmas Evil, from 1980.
That is not how I would describe that.
Starring Brandon Maygard, who's probably better known as the father of Fiona Apple. You've got Jeffrey Dahmer from The Walking Dead in there as well. It's a guy who, as a kid, sees his mom making out with Santa Claus.
Took that song a little too seriously.
Yep.
Yep.
Mom had a Santa fetish, and this traumatizes the kid, and he grows up, and he starts becoming the persona of Santa Claus.
Yes.
He spies on the neighborhood kids, he writes down lists of good deeds and bad deeds. But at the same time, you're kind of mesmerized by the fact that Brandon Maygard's given this film a lot better of an acting performance than it probably deserves.
Oh, yeah. No, he's trying a lot harder than his paycheck would indicate, mm-hmm. probably. It's not my favorite of the killer Santa movies, as it were, but I will tell you what, if you want to watch a film with a killer Santa, that's your thing, and you want to be surprised by an ending, I can guarantee you, you will not see this ending coming, because I consider myself pretty learned as it comes to film, and I have seen a lot of weird stuff, and I was surprised by the ending of this film. So.
Number two.
For me, this was a toss-up between, was this number one or number two? All
right.
So I cut it down, and I realized this was going to be my number two. Just eked out. Number one just eked it out. My number two is Santa Slays, starring Bill Goldberg, because I love that film. It is a better, I don't want to say a better version, but it is Santa's with muscles. It's everything Santa with muscles wanted to be.
It's almost like a Mad Magazine version of like a horror slasher.
Yeah, film. That's a really good way of putting it. It's Santa in the story, Santa played by Bill Goldberg, he's actually the Antichrist, and he lost a bet, and so he had to be nice for 2,000 years. And so that time is up now, because it was filmed around the millennium, and Santa's back at his old ways, and he just destroys this little town. It's hilarious. The tongue firmly in cheek mm-hmm. of this film. It has some of the best ha ha ha, look what they did little moments in it. I'm not going to spoil it. There are just too many to name, but you will not go 5 minutes in this film without like laughing at some little thing happening. It's great.
There's a great moment of a series like he rides like almost a rocket powered buffalo.
Yes, it's a giant white buffalo instead of a reindeer. It's great.
And the opening scene with Fran Dresser, Chris Kattan, and James Caan is probably one of the best openings you'll ever see.
Yes,
in a horror
because
movie.
Exactly. What the thing I also find funny is after watching the first 5 minutes where that scene happens. He was my favorite. Goldberg, you know, Santa Goldberg, is clearly the hero after that. Because he does exactly what everyone in the audience wants.
All right, my number two. My number two is my Mystery Science Theater 3000 selection, and it is Santa Claus, a.k.a. Santa versus the Devil.
Oh, bitch. Santa, what's that, 1959?
Yes.
Oh, that one. That almost was on my list, too, but I didn't want to put MST movies on there. But yeah, no, that movie is, it's got elements.
It's weird on its own, but then thankfully you've got the bots, and I think this was a Mike episode.
That was a Mike episode.
That was a Mike episode, and it's probably my favorite Mike episode, to be honest.
Oh, really? That's a fun one. I do not suggest that one on Rift. Mostly because it was filmed in 1959 with 1959 ideals.
Oh, yeah.
So there are some not appropriate comments that are made.
1959 Mexican ideals.
Yes. So there are some not appropriate comments and situations that are presented.
And the scene with the kids from around the world.
That's the one. That's the scene I'm thinking about. That's the one.
And here we have the kids from France who smell the high heaven.
But no, that's a lot of fun. That movie is fun, and as Mac indicated, the general premise is that Santa is attempting to give out presents while Pitch, a demon straight from hell, dressed in red pajamas and sporting two little fake horns on his head, who obviously has a second job as a dancer, tries to stop him in various failing endeavors. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed. This could have used 100% more El Santo.
Yes. As every film south of the border should. Basically, every film south of the Mason-Dixon, in my opinion, would be improved by El Santo.
I mean, Deliverance with El Santo?
It writes itself. Bet you didn't think you'd hear that on a top 10 alternative Christmas
movie. All right, here we are, the big ones. Number one.
Number one. Now, this also is one where I was debating because I love this film. I consider it a Christmas film. But Another Holiday seems to be more important in its plot structure. This film is The Hebrew Hammer. Oh, I love this film. It is a spoof of the 1970s cop circa Shaft style films where the Hebrew Hammer, who is, if you haven't guessed, a Jewish man, has to thwart evil Santa, played by Andy Dick, from stopping Hanukkah. I still say it's a Christmas movie because Santa is the evil person, and it does take around place around the holidays, but it is hilarious. It is the only movie of its type that I like better is Black Dynamite, and that's one of my favorite movies. So, this movie is hilarious. It is not Christmas without the Hebrew Hammer being played in my house.
Excellent. All right, my number one, and you can argue that this is probably mainstream, but you know what? It was still such a weird, wacky movie. I like it. Scrooged with Bill Murray.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a great one. I would have leaned probably towards this a little too mainstream, but that is a great film.
You got a great update on the Christmas Carol story. You've got Bill Murray just being an absolute prick, which is always the best Bill Murray.
Yes.
You've got Carol Kane in one of her nuttiest roles.
Yes.
You've got Buster Poindexter as a demonic taxi driver.
New York Dolls.
Yep. The scene with the Ghost of Christmas Future is genuinely creepy in the elevator. Yes.
Oh, yeah, 100%. No, that is just it's a great film. It is my second favorite version of the Scrooge story. Mm-hmm. The Christmas Tale story, the Muppets, it out a little bit, but no, there will never be a better, at least in my lifetime, I feel, Scrooge than Bill Murray. It's just he nails it.
And you got the '80s Bobcat Goldthwait. Here's to talk like this.
He is a director now, folks. Producing some pretty good horror films.
World's Greatest Dad.
Oh yeah.
God Bless America. Yeah, he's done some really good independent work.
Yeah. So. But yeah, no, I totally agree. Scrooge is a great pick for number one, Matt. That is just a great, solid film. So what do you guys like? What are your, and leave a message in the comments. Yeah. What are your top 10 favorite alternative Christmas movies?
Honorable mentions. And you said you had a dishonorable mention.
I have a dishonorable mention.
All right, let's go for the honorables first and then surprises with the dishonorable.
Okay, all right. Well, for an honorable mention, I actually really like the movie The Ice Harvest. It is a thriller / crime drama. It takes place over the day of Christmas. And it's just a really good, really good film. I didn't put it on the list just because I almost think it's not that it's too good or anything like that, but it's its own thing. It doesn't need Christmas. It could have been any day. Christmas is just a really nice archetype for its plot structure.
All right.
So how about you?
I got a ton of them, so I don't know if you want to go ahead and we can just go through listing them all.
Sure, go ahead.
All right, on my honorable mentions, I have The Ref with Dennis Leary.
Oh, yes.
This is 90s MTV vignettes, breathless monologues, Dennis Leary.
Yes.
The reason why it didn't make my list is because it's got Kevin Spacey.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Two Front Teeth is also on there as my honorable mention. Jack Frost, The Killer Snowman 1.
Basically, my list is your honorable mentions.
Santa Slay, yep. But the two that we didn't bring up first, Stalag 17 with William Holden.
Yes, good call.
And a young, I'm Peter Graves.
Oh, he would not like that. Peter Graves does not like being made fun of.
But yeah, it's not. Well, it takes place in a prisoner of war camp, and Christmas Day is when you get the big reveal. I don't want to spoil it because it is a movie worth seeing.
Yes, it is.
And my other one is A Christmas Horror Story.
Yes, that also is, that one right there was also eking its way to being on my list.
It's an anthology film. Yes. You've got William Shatner, who's kind of doing the wraparound. And he clearly was drinking on set.
Oh, yeah, 100%. We watched that for the first time last year at our annual holiday.
Get together with Brian, Cha-Cha,
yep. And we watch bad movies, and they tend to have a theme. And last year's, of course, we watched it on the holidays. So we watched it thinking it was going to be horrible, and we were generally impressed. Yes. It is a very, very good movie. And now it's our tradition. Like, it's how we start mm-hmm. our bad movies. I would actually suggest it to any good horror fan. It's not a bad movie.
It is a very good, very good horror Christmas movie. Yes. Absolutely.
So, any more?
Did you do your dishonorable mention?
I haven't done my dishonorable. I actually have another honorable mention.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Honorables first.
Yep. Okay. Well, I wanted to also throw a little bit of a nod out to Die Hard 2, also a Christmas movie, and I don't think it gets nearly enough love for how good of a film it is. It is hard to live in the shadow of Die Hard, but I really think it's a great film on its own.
Oh, yeah, you've got Cheektowaga's own William Sadler.
Yes, good call.
Yep, and of course, Franco Nero, the original Django.
Yes. Just hamming it up.
Yep.
Let's see here. I wanted to mention Bad Santa because it's also kind of in the gray. Like, I think at this point it is way too mainstream for us not to have included fully on the list, but I really do enjoy the film. It's fun. It doesn't claim to be anything other than fun.
And there actually was a sequel too, wasn't there?
Yeah, I didn't watch that. Oh. Yeah, I saw no reason for that film to have a sequel. Pretty much any time there's a great film, they make a sequel. There's been like three that I can ever remember being good, so I try to stay away from those. Batman Returns.
Oh yeah, Returns
is also worth mentioning as a unknown or lesser known mm-hmm. Christmas movie, and that's for me about it. Everything else is like I could just be sitting here naming Christmas movies.
Yeah, same here. Yeah.
So my dishonorable mention.
All right, let's hear this.
So I will preface this. The reason it's a dishonorable mention is because this film, for a short time, it was dethroned. For a short time, was the worst film I have ever seen.
Ooh.
Yes. It has been dethroned because it does have a plot structure, and I found several films without one. This film is called Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny.
Oh, God.
Yes, yes. Oh. I found this film, sad to my knowledge, I found this film without a riff before they had found it. So I went into this dry, as it were, and I wish I was drunk, because this film is horrid. This film is, well, it's not off film. It's, okay, let me start this off with...
It's an amusement park, almost propaganda film.
Correct. It is an amusement park propaganda film. An amusement park called Pirate's World, which, of course, is where you want to go for your Christmas-themed things, produced, which is an odd sentence...
And this is like, what, Tennessee? Or
This is the South, yes. They produced a Christmas movie where Santa gets stuck on the beach because his reindeer just flew away. And he can't get out, so he tells children a story after they have several failed attempts at getting Santa off of the beach. That, mind you, it does not appear that this is in any way near the holiday. And the children don't appear in any way concerned that he might miss Christmas, whatever. It's not directed well or acted well.
Or anything.
Nothing about it is well. The dubbing is horrible because, yes, it is dubbed. They didn't have a microphone. Since you don't hear the beach at all, the waves at all. So, to take up its runtime, what it does is Santa tells a story. They went out and bought a stock, like, film or...
Like a European, like almost like what Roger Corman would do. They bought a European film, and then they repurposed it for an American film.
Yes, that film...
it was like Thumbelina or
something? It was Thumbelina. And how they... I love this, because instead of him just telling the story of Thumbelina, which is, by the way, when he tells it, it cuts to what is effectively a stage play. Okay? Instead of just doing that, he doesn't do that. He tells a story about a woman going to Pirate's World, where she sees a display of Thumbelina. So it's Santa telling children on a beach a story about a woman at an amusement park who's going to see an attraction about Thumbelina. And then it's this Thumbelina story. And it's not like a short, like, 5-minute thing.
Oh, this is a good half hour.
This is like 45 minutes. Yeah. And you will feel every minute of that. And in this story of Thumbelina, which isn't a super, I would say, like, it's well-known enough. We all heard of Thumbelina, but it's not, like, whatever you want to do with her story. She's a short, little, tiny little girl. So it almost has nothing to do with her being short, mind you, or tiny. It has everything to do with her being lost in the woods or running away. And and a weird subplot about possibly marrying an old blind mole.
Yeah, we're talking about bestiality here.
Yeah, there's some weird connotations in this. And again, this is all at the level of a stage play. So you got people dressed up like rodents and birds and stuff. Now, the costumes are just obviously from Pirate's World, so they're not bad per se. They're not great. But it's weird. It's a weird plot. And then it just kind of ends. And then you start to remember that the movie's called Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny. And I haven't mentioned an ice cream bunny. So guess who gets Santa out of the... out of the sand.
The scariest Easter Bunny costume I have ever seen.
The literal scariest. I have watched a horror movie about a killer giant Easter Bunny who giant fangs hop around, stab people with a carrot. Not even close to being
Peter Rotten Tail.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Not even close to being scared. Unbeknownst, without any kind of knowledge of the situation Santa was in, this Easter Bunny on a fire truck, because obviously... drives to the beach. Mind you, the actor in the suit cannot see. There are no eye holes. And he's driving an old-timey fire truck.
And there are children in the streets.
There are children in his way. He gets Santa, and then they drive back to Pirate's World. Because that's where, you know, he needs to be. Again, they've chosen the actor in the suit that restricts his vision to drive a now fire truck with children hanging off of it on an old dirt road. It's a great... And then, for no reason at all, other than to haunt my dreams, the ice cream bunny, and don't ask why he's called that, I don't know either, turns to the camera, and I don't know why, to this day, I think it's just because apparently the world hates me, winks the slowest, creepiest wink ever. Just one eye slowly closes. And opens like the eye of Sauron. It's horrifying. Truly a horrifying film. And there are just several scenes that make no sense. There's a scene where they film children just playing about. One of the kids jumps off a one-story building with an umbrella. He survives. He's fine because he's a kid and they're flexible or bouncy or whatever. But you would never show this to children. They will attempt this feat. It's horrible. It's a horrible film. Horrible film. Dishonorable mention.
I have no dishonorable mentions just because I have yet to see anything that I genuinely hate around the Christmas time. So, but yeah, I mean, again, folks, if you have your own suggestions, if you have your own honorable or even dishonorable mentions, go ahead and let us know.
Yes, we'd love to see your list. Or perhaps you just like ours and want to talk to us about it. Anything you want, leave a comment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before I sign off for 2018, I just want to wish you all a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year. And a thank you to all of you who have been with this podcast ever since it dropped on July, Friday the 13th, this past summer. Here's to a good first year and for many more to come. And just to remind you, I'm going to be on a bit of a hiatus. The next episode won't drop until January 11th of 2019. There we will be covering the Polizio Tesci films of the one and only Enzo G. Castellari. This is Mackenzie Lambert for Mac in the Movies. You all mean a lot, and take care, folks.